Challenge Cyber Defense.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. It's now.
Welcome to this deep dive. We're going to get straight into the heart of global cyber conflict today, looking at some pretty alarming open source intelligence.
It's very recent, and it's coming straight from the Cyber Intelligence Bureau at Orange Cyber Defense.
Right, and it's all based on discussions they've tracked on hacktivist Telegram channels, covering what, we're in early November of 2025?
That's right. And our goal here is to give you a really precise, explicit, and completely neutral analysis of what's happening.
Strictly cyber.
Strictly cyber. Who's attacking whom? How are they doing it? And maybe most importantly, how are the targets escalating? Because they are.
And that's the key takeaway for me from this material. This isn't just scattered vandalism anymore. This feels like strategic disruption. Real-world politics gets an immediate digital response.
An immediate structured retaliation.
So let's start there. What are the geopolitical flashpoints that are, lighting these fires?
Well, the main engine, especially for the most dominant pro-Russian groups, is still the NATO response in Ukraine. They're very good at finding specific actions to justify their attacks.
And the data shows Denmark is squarely in their sights.
Absolutely. It's because of their financial support. The source material is very explicit. It cites Denmark's commitment, 1.2 billion euros in 2025 already?
Yeah, with another half a billion planned. So these groups are using that huge number as the public reason for hitting Danish airports, railways, government sites.
It's a very simple narrative to sell to their volunteers. It creates this clear feedback loop.
A rhetoric to retaliation pipeline, almost.
That's a perfect way to put it. We saw the exact same thing in Belgium. The Belgian defense minister gave this highly provocative interview.
The one where he reportedly threatened to wipe Moscow off the face of the earth?
That's the one. And immediately after, there was a surge of cyber attacks against Belgian government and corporate infrastructure. The link between the words and the consequence is almost instantaneous now.
But it's not just the Russian-NATO axis, is it? The landscape seems to be splintering.
It is. You have groups like Holy League, for example, mobilizing around the Middle East conflict. They call their operations the Islamic Resistance's digital front lines.
And they're actively asking for crypto donations with the Free Palestine hashtag to beef up their infrastructure.
Exactly. And then you've got other conflicts, too. A group called TUNET is raising the issue of Kurdish rights, which is fueling their operations against Turkey and Syria. So really, almost every global grievance now has a digital attack wing.
So who are the main players here? Who's actually doing this? Because one name just keeps coming up.
No name 05716.
Mm-hmm.
Or NNMM05716. Their operational pace is just, it's dominant.
The numbers are staggering. They claimed 56 cyber attacks in 1 week.
And then 39 the next. What's interesting is how openly they operate. Even mocking law enforcement. They publicly dismissed a Europol operation, calling it Operation Eastwood, basically saying it was useless.
So how do they manage that kind of volume? It's not a traditional top-down structure, is it?
No, it's very community-driven. They rely heavily on something called the DDoSha Project.
Okay, so for anyone listening, what is the DDoSha Project?
It's basically a platform to coordinate volunteers. It's decentralized. It lets thousands of people contribute their own computer's bandwidth to launch these huge distributed denial-of-service attacks. It's what makes them so resilient.
And they're not alone. The intelligence confirms they have alliances with other collectives. Heaven of the Slavs, Perun Swaroga.
And Smesherex. It's a whole constellation of groups working together.
Then you have the other side of it, the commercial aspect.
Right, the financial imperative. You have groups like Dark Storm Team who've completely monetized it. They openly sell DDoS services. I mean, they list their prices.
And it's cheap, right? I saw something like $20 for 3 hours of disruption.
$20! It just radically lowers the barrier to entry. You don't need a state's budget. You just need a credit card and a target.
And it's not just them. Pharaoh's team, UserSec. They're all in on it. But UserSec is a little different. They're selling training.
Yeah, they're moving into selling expertise, training modules on how to hack things like RTSP camera systems, so CCTV cameras and VNC servers, which is basically remote desktop control. They're professionalizing the next wave of attackers.
Okay, so when we break down the attack themselves, DDoS is clearly the main weapon of choice.
It's the baseline, yeah. It's visible, it's disruptive, and you can tie it directly to a political statement.
And the numbers in the intel tell that story. Denmark got hit with, over 1,700 attack orders?
1,755. Belgium got nearly 1,000 after their minister's comments. Sweden, almost 700. You can see the strategic priority.
But the really critical finding here, the thing that's truly escalating, is the move into industrial control systems, SCADA systems.
This is the real game changer. This is the difference between taking a website offline and affecting physical, real-world processes. We're moving from data risk to, frankly, physical safety risk.
And the examples are chilling.
Yeah.
In France, volunteers from that DDoja project claimed they got full administrative access to an EDF hydroelectric power plant.
Full access. They claimed they could shut down generators, manipulate water levels, destabilize the whole system.
And that wasn't a one-off. In Italy, they hit industrial painting plants.
Customer painting plants, yes. They claimed they could change drying temperatures, which could damage equipment or even start a fire. They even hit a hotel's SCADA system, the Villa Aurora controlling heating and water for guests.
So are they just testing their skills on these softer targets?
It certainly looks like it, or they're just exploiting any vulnerability they can find. The group TUNET was actually explicit about it. They said they destroyed Turkish SCADA systems to, and I quote, develop our talents and learn more.
They're using critical infrastructure as a training ground.
That's exactly what it implies, and it's extremely worrying.
So across all these attacks, what were the main sectors being hit?
Government, military, and law enforcement was number one. Over 21% of all incidents in 1 week. Then telecoms Proximus, Scarlet in Belgium, and transport, like the Danish railway company DSB and even the Kiev Metro.
And then on the purely criminal side, you have Pharaoh's team selling what they call web shells.
Which is basically a backdoor. It's a script that gives you persistent remote access to a compromised website. They were selling access to government and university sites alongside thousands of stolen ID cards.
So the attacks and the revenue are just tightly interwoven.
Completely. And beyond the technical stuff, you have to look at the psychology. The propaganda is just as important as the hack itself.
You see that with NNMM05716. They're constantly mocking political figures like the Belgian defense minister or President Zelensky. It's a psychological operation.
It is. It's about making leaders look ineffective and creating doubt. It shifts the battle from code to perception.
And we get these strange little glimpses into who these people are. Pharaoh's team posted that one of their hackers, Goldboy, is 15 years old.
15! It really changes your mental image of the threat actor, doesn't it?
It does. It suggests their recruitment is working. Meanwhile, you have older groups like GhostSec almost having an identity crisis, debating the decay of Anonymous, and worrying about being hijacked by intelligence agencies.
Right, fighting over ideological purity.
So if you pull this all together, the targets, the money, the ideology, what are the big motivations driving all of this?
I think you can boil it down to three things. First, and most obvious, is retribution and coercion. They are punishing countries like Denmark and Belgium to try and force them to stop supporting Ukraine. The cyber attack serves a clear political goal.
And second has to be the money.
The financial imperative, yes. Selling DDoS services, stolen data, It creates a sustainable funding model. It makes these groups incredibly resilient.
And the third is the ideology itself, the cause. Pro-Russian sentiment, Kurdish independence, Islamic resistance. That's the fuel that gets the volunteers to sign up in the first place.
Exactly. That's the foundation for everything else.
So, to summarize this intelligence brief, what we're seeing is that geopolitical tension has totally reshaped the threat landscape. These aren't lone wolves. These are structured, allied, financially self-sufficient groups.
But the most critical strategic point, I think, is the demonstrated capability and willingness to attack industrial control systems in the West.
The SCADA hacks in France and Italy. That's not about disrupting a website anymore.
No, that's a severe escalation. The risk is no longer just theoretical. It's about physical safety and utility loss, and it's being done by these non-state hacktivist groups.
Which brings us to the final question we should probably leave our listeners with.
I think so. Given that these groups have successfully gotten persistent access to physical control systems in core European infrastructure, the question for all of us is, how quickly can national security shift its focus from just defending data networks to defending the physical machinery that underpins our daily lives?
A profound and very necessary question. Thank you for tuning in to this deep dive.
Analyze, understand, and stay secure.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. We'll be talking about it on this channel very soon.
Orange Cyber Defense.